It is State Senator Rob Ort. Senator, good morning.
Oh, good morning.
Lots going on, but let's start with the news that broke earlier in the week, and that is the state planning to release inmates because of staffing shortages at prisons around the state. What is the exact state's plan, Senator, and what is your response to it?
So the plan from Department of Corrections, from the commissioner, you have to presume the governor, is to identify. Now, there's been a list submitted. No one has seen that list. I haven't seen that list. But they were trying to identify at each facility inmates who are at the end of their term. I don't know if there's, you know, within 6 months, but there's a sort of a window where they're towards the end of their term. They're quote unquote nonviolent. I say quote unquote because over the years, the definition of nonviolent oftentimes from whether it's Department of Corrections, whether it's Democrat legislators, whether it's the governor, does not always equate with nonviolent, at least in my definition. But they're quote unquote nonviolent. They're going to identify this list is going to be submitted. And then from that list, I don't know if it's going to be taken as is or if that list is going to be then further pared down, but they're going to identify X amount of inmates to be released early to quote unquote deal with or lessen the stress or the impact or the burden on the staff because of the staffing shortage and the staffing crisis. So they're using the staffing shortage as a rationale for releasing inmates early back into our state, back into our communities. The irony of that, Joe, is that the staffing shortage has been made worse and exacerbated by Governor Hochul and the commissioner by their firing of 2,000 corrections officers just several weeks ago, and their refusal to hire them back. And even further, to try to blacklist these individuals from getting jobs, even in local sheriff's departments or local jails or whatever. So, you know, it's hard to sit there and say we have a staffing crisis. We're going to make that worse by firing 2,000 corrections officers. And then our solution to that is to not hire those folks back, but to release inmates out into the communities early. And it just seems like that's always the Democrats' default position for the last 6-7 years. It's getting more people out of jail, not reducing crime, but getting more people out of jail. It's always about the inmate, getting the inmate out of jail, getting the inmate back to their family, getting the inmate back, you know, getting make sure they have good mental health. And it's never been about the mental health and the well-being of the corrections officers. That was why this strike happened to begin with. And we're sort of back right. You know, this to me is a great microcosm of what is wrong in our prison system, why so many COs went on strike, why so many COs don't want to be COs anymore. And so instead of addressing the staffing crisis by bringing those people back on, the governor's solution is to release convicted criminals back into the community before their sentence has been served.
Speaking of the governor's solutions and staffing, are National Guard troops still at these prisons?
Yes, they are.
Is that a permanent solution? Does the state have a timetable on when are they going to leave with the inmates? What's the plan on the National Guard?
No. The Guard is there, to my knowledge, and per conversations that I have had with members of the National Guard, including leadership, they are there indefinitely. So that there is no end date at this juncture for the Guard to leave. And that's another concern, is that you have the Army National Guard. You have about 5,000 Army National Guard soldiers. According to the governor, this is costing the state $106 million a month that obviously was not budgeted for. So you have $106 million of cost you're incurring. You have Guard soldiers And I was a member of the Army National Guard. I went to Afghanistan with them. I have nothing but positive things to say about my time in the Guard. But this is not a mission that the Guard is a core mission that they are trained for. I'm sure that there are units in there, military police units and the like. But the reality is they are not trained to be guard, corrections officers in a civilian prison. That is not the military or the National Guard's role. And so you have, in some cases, 18, 19, 20-year-old Army National Guard soldiers in these prisons. To be a CO in New York, you have to be 21 years old. So, you know, already it's an interesting sort of paradigm. You have an 18 or 19-year-old young soldier in these facilities, not really trained for the danger, for the violence in these facilities. You can't have weapons in these facilities. You can't have firearms in these facilities. And so it's a real dangerous situation for the corrections officers, but it's an even more dangerous situation, I believe, for the Army National Guard. And there's no end in sight on that mission. It's an indefinite deployment at this point, and it's costing the state $106 million to have them in these facilities. So you have the Guard, you have 2,000 less corrections officers, and now you're going to be releasing, inmates. And again, what is that list? You know, nonviolent. Okay, what is your definition of nonviolent? Who are these people, and where are they going? I think the public has a right to know who's on that list, and I think the victims' families, in many cases, depending on who it is, has a right to know who's being released early because of a staffing crisis that you have contributed to and made infinitely worse.
Speaking of the 2,000 COs who did not return, the state tried to ban them from any kind of state job or security job. Is that still in effect, or did the governor let that expire?
No, that's still in effect. I believe there was a I don't know if it was a county or a locality whose name escapes me, but they did file a legal challenge. They wanted to hire, I don't know if it was one or many COs for positions in that municipality, and a judge sided with their ability to do so, basically saying that the state cannot block, you know, the county of Niagara or the town of Lancaster from hiring these folks. And so it was a limited ruling only to that municipality and to those COs that were being hired by that municipality. But I think it speaks to the idea that, legally speaking, I don't think the governor has a leg to stand on. This is more of how many places can she get to side with her? How many fellow Democrats, like Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz, who have sided with the governor to say, we're not going to hire these folks, even though when it comes to sheriff's departments, when it comes to local law enforcement, everybody needs people. Everyone I talk to needs more people. And again, to try to blacklist these folks at the same time, and this is sort of an interesting paradigm, Joe. A couple of years ago, you might remember the governor signed a law called Clean Slate. And the premise of Clean Slate was so that employers would not know, you know, if you had committed a crime in your past and you had served your sentence, that basically not only an employer wouldn't be able to ask about any previous crime, nor would they even be able to know about that offense, right? The idea being, we want to give you a second chance. We don't want you to have to, you know, the worst timing, whatever, the worst decision you've ever made is going to come back to haunt you forever. So we want to give you a clean slate. That's for criminals, people who have committed crimes, who have victimized people. Okay, we're getting them a clean slate. At the same time, the same governor, the same folks who supported that are advocating that we do not give a clean slate, apparently, to corrections officers who didn't commit a crime, who haven't been charged with anything, who haven't gone to jail. You know what I mean? So it's just a real irony that we're trying to blacklist people in law enforcement, people who normally we would identify as the good guys, at the same time that we're giving a clean slate to people who did victimize or get convicted of a crime and serve that time. So clearly, you know, clearly a dichotomy, a contrast there that I think is very revealing about the priorities of this administration.
And the HALT Act is just temporarily suspended, right? It's not a permanent thing. It will go back into effect after so many days.
Yeah, the HALT Act is very much in effect. There were provisions within it, or provisions, I guess, of the HALT Act that have been temporarily suspended under the agreement between the state and the Corrections Officers Union. And so I think it was 90 days, but there's reviews along the way, right? So I think there's a 30-day or maybe a 60-day review up to 90 days. And again, those are certain provisions that the state and the corrections officers identified as specifically labor intensive. So there's provisions of HALT that require a lot of manpower. And because of the staffing shortage, those were suspended for, like I said, I think it's up to 90 days. It could be less, I think, but it's up to 90 days. But the HALT Act, for those listening at home, many of its provisions, most of them are still very much in effect. And ultimately the law is going to fully go back into effect, whether it's 60 or 90 days from whenever the end of the strike was.
All right, on to the budget, Senator, because that was pushed. The deadline was pushed back. Where are the highlights in the budget, and where is the holdup?
Yeah, it's pretty much a low light reel right now. But it's there's obviously a disagreement, or would seemingly be a disagreement over money, meaning how much money to spend and tax. The governor proposed a budget that was $8 billion over last year's adopted. The state Senate adopted a budget that was $17 billion over last year's adopted. So there have been no table targets agreed upon, which means that each budget subcommittee doesn't even know what they're dealing with. And of course, we don't have any sense of what the final budget will be. How much Democrats intend to, you know, increase taxes, or how much more money they intend to spend on state services. So that's one piece. I think money, ultimately, I think they'll figure that out. But the real holdup seems to be on the policy ideas. The governor is pushing for a mask ban, banning, masks, post-COVID medical masks, whatever it was that a lot of times you see people use in the commission of crime. And obviously during COVID, that ban, I think there was a ban for a long time in New York. And if my memory serves me correctly, that ban was lifted because people obviously were wearing masks, because you were required to wear a mask in a store or wear a mask wherever you went. And that ban was lifted. She wants to reinstitute a mask ban because obviously post-pandemic, the idea that you could wear a mask into the bank or a mask into a retail store, which is what's happening in the commission of your crime, we then can't identify the person. And I think there's exceptions to her ban. There'd be exceptions as far as if you had a medical reason or a thing from a doctor or whatever it might be. But that would be very much the exception, not the rule. And of course, my colleagues in the Democratic Senate and Democratic Assembly, they don't like the mask ban. Why? Because they just always seem to side or be sympathetic to people who commit crimes. I don't know how else to put it. You would think this would be an easy one, right? Like, let's ban masks so people can't wear them around and in places that they don't need to wear a mask, and so they can commit a crime and not be identified. And yet the Democrats are fighting that. There's another policy about involuntary. The governor wants to make it easier to admit somebody for mental health reasons involuntarily, right? So involuntary commitment in New York is very difficult. I actually supported something like this many years ago when I was chair of the Mental Health Committee, Joe. The idea being that you have a lot of folks who need real help. You see them living on the streets. You see them in jails. You see them in ER or emergency rooms. They're not getting the help they need. They're on the streets. They're more likely to be victimized than they are a perpetrator of a crime. And we make it very difficult in the state to be able to get them the help they need. These are folks who are not of sound mind, who have significant mental health issues, and the governor wants to make that easier to get them admitted to get them the help they need. I think that's actually generally a good thing. My colleagues, again, in the Senate and the Assembly, do not seem to think it's a good thing. And then, of course, there's the changes to discovery. The governor is pushing changes to discovery. Discovery is sort of the ugly sister of bail reform. In some ways, it's infinitely worse. It has resulted, I think, in something like 30%, maybe more, of felony cases being dropped because prosecutors can't meet these ridiculous arbitrary deadlines, which means you have people who should be being prosecuted and maybe going to jail, not even getting prosecuted. They're just walking out the door, which was always the intent. And not surprisingly, any changes to discovery have been met with resistance from the state Senate and state assembly. So those are the big policies that seem to be holding up the budget. And again, I don't always agree with Governor Hochul. In fact, I often seem to disagree with Governor Hochul more and more, unfortunately. But on these three things, she's pushing for policies and changes that I think at least would move the state in the right direction. And my colleagues in the Senate Democrat and Assembly conferences, of course, are opposing those. So we'll see where we go. We're past the deadline. The budget was due last week. We're now, moving towards a week late. There's not really an end in sight. So hopefully this week we can get something done. If not, we're going to be sitting in Albany, I suspect, for a long time here until we can get this budget done.
What's the number that you're expecting on this budget when it's passed?
So I think when it all is said and done, I mean, if history is any sort of guide, it'll be between the Senate and the governor's number. So I think you're looking at anywhere between 10 and 12 billion over last year's number. Now, last year's number, if my memory serves me correctly, was, I think, about 250 billion. So I think you're looking at a 260 to 262 or $63 billion budget, to put it in perspective, the increase, if you go back to 2019, the budget, I think, was like $190 billion. It might have even been a little less than that. So in 6 years, under total Democrat control, the state budget has grown, by, 70, $80 billion in 6 years. And I would ask New Yorkers, what do you have to show for that? I mean, if you're getting more, if people felt the state was safer, if they felt the state was more economically prosperous, if they felt the state was, bringing in more people than we were losing, if that was all true, then maybe you could argue you're getting a return on that investment. But I would say most people feel the state is headed absolutely in the wrong direction. The city of New York is headed in the wrong direction. Most of our major cities are worse off today than they were before the pandemic. And yet we're spending more and more money for seemingly a worse and worse result. As you know, our budget together already today is larger than Texas and Florida's budget put together. And of course, they have more people in both of those states. California spends, or I should say, we spend 1.5 times more per person than California spends already. And we're going to look at a budget again. It's probably going to be about 10 to 12 billion over last year's budget. That's my estimation. New Yorkers are spending more. They're getting less. And that's why they're leaving. And I don't expect this budget financially to be a whole lot of relief for New Yorkers. But again, we'll see if we can even get these very modest policy changes in on issues that I would say most New Yorkers overwhelmingly agree with.
Two quick questions. I know we're running out of time. The MTA, the congestion pricing, we've heard so much of congestion pricing throughout New York State. I know it's something being discussed in Albany. Where does that stand? If I drive through the zone in New York City on my way, well, I wouldn't drive on the way to a Mets game, but you get the point. Are you still getting charged? How's that? And what's the fight in Albany?
Yeah, you are getting charged. The president has said he was going to kill it, that it was not going to get whatever federal funding or approval it needed to. The governor and the state, they're fighting to obviously to keep it and tax people more who are entering Manhattan and New York City. And so there's a legal fight that's going on. I would like to see the president and the federal government, you know, really turn the screws to get congestion pricing to stop. But right now it is a fight between New York State and the federal government. Most New Yorkers that I know, people who live down there, do not support this thing. They don't want it. It's sort of a far left progressive environmental sort of push to do this. And the governor paused it once upon a time, and now she's fighting to keep it. So, but right now, as far my understanding is, if you're driving in there, you are getting tagged with that $9 tax.
Yeah, it was weird. She paused it during an election season, and then 2 weeks after the election, put it back on.
That's right. Which tells you everything you need to know about not only this governor but this issue. You know, this was a, they knew it was a bad issue. Hakeem Jeffries begged her to turn it off or pause it. She did. And then as soon as the election was over and as soon as President Trump was elected, they reinstituted it, only instead of 15, they did it at 9, and they wanted to try to convince people that it was a deal, or that, you know, that it was, they were doing some great deed. And so, you know, now she's like fighting to save it. President Trump has said he wants to kill it. And we have no idea how we're going to pay for it. And now they're still trying to increase taxes to fund the MTA. So, you know, congestion pricing was supposed to pay for the MTA, but of course that doesn't seem to be working. And so now we need to tax people more to pay for the MTA. The MTA, for our listeners here in Western New York, is probably the worst mass transit authority in the country, and certainly the most poorly run. And so every year they're looking to get more money with no accountability. So it's really a disaster. And, you know, our conference is going to oppose any tax increase or any new money that goes to the MTA.
Real quick, you mentioned County Executive, Erie County Executive Mark Poloncarz. He's obviously looking to run for Congress in one of these districts. He was in NY24. Your district overlaps with NY24. What kind of chances do you give County Executive Mark Poloncarz if he wanted to run against Claudia Tenney?
Zero. Absolutely zero. I think Claudia Tenney would welcome that race. He has no chance. If he runs, then Claudia Tenney is as good as the congressman or congresswoman for the next several years.
Awesome. All right. Minority Leader Rob Ort, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.